I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome back to Extra Shot, our pod spilling the funniest stories in sport this week. I'm Jack. Zach is with me as always.
Hello, Jack.
Hi, mate. And got a special guest today. Got Mickey Down with us.
Hello, guys.
We're doing the Dennis Rodman episode shortly, so we're having a Mickey day.
Hello.
So we'll be talking about Dennis.
Here. Good to be here again.
Zach, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah. So last week we told a story about Man United missing out on the signing of Erling Haaland because they basically got mixed up with the time zone. So this scout had spoken to Alfie Haaland, Erling's dad, and had agreed that he'd signed for Man United, and they basically didn't call him back in time. So they missed out on this transfer. A lot of people online have been calling bullshit on this story, but it is true. There's a Times article. They did an article about this Man United scout who died recently, and that was one of the stories. So it is true, but came across another story of Man United missing out on a prodigal young star, and that was Matthias de Ligt, who is now at Bayern Munich. But the story goes that it was back in 2018. Matthias was playing for Ajax's youth team, or maybe just broken into the first team, and United scouts went to look at him, and everything was looking great. Like his positional awareness was fantastic. He had a great physique, great reading of the game, and they were offered the chance to sign him for peanuts, basically. But they eventually turned him down because his dad was fat, and they basically feared that he'd go the same way. So this was like included in the scouts report. It's like great
eugenics report.
Great, yeah. Great player, but his dad is quite tubby. And
so are they saying we don't want fat dads? It's sort of bad for the brand, or are they saying
that he's going to become fat?
They were worried that, like, you know, he's
got bad genes.
Exactly. Yeah, he's gonna end up quite slow and immobile.
Yeah.
But I mean,
in his 50s.
Yeah, probably in his 50s. Like, he's an elite athlete.
He's like, is the dad 28?
Yeah. Was the dad a footballer?
I don't know, actually. That's a good question.
Too fat.
But that decision didn't age very well, because the next season, Matthias captained Ajax to the Champions League semi-finals at the age of 19 and was then sold to Juventus for 75 million. So that one
serves them right for being shallow.
Exactly.
Yeah, so who made that decision?
The
physio, the doctor, or the scout?
Was it like the medical?
I think it was. I think it was the scout included it in their report. That was like, yeah, it looks great, but just wanted to let you know.
Yeah, 10 out of 10 for everything. Is, but how heavy is your dad?
Dad.
Yeah, but yeah, serves him right.
If he'd been dead, he would have got the.
Yeah, position. Exactly. If his dad had died, even if it was from obesity, he just wouldn't have asked.
How
do they do a lot of digging into the family generally?
I'm sure, because they have to ask heart conditions.
Yeah.
Things like that, genetic disorders.
Is your dad ugly?
Yeah.
Bad for the
Is your dad going to disgrace us with his look?
It reminds me of, did you hear the story of Jurgen Klopp when he was at Mainz? He was interviewed for the Hamburg manager's job, and they eventually turned him down because he turned up to the interview in ripped jeans and smelling of cigarettes.
What, and they were like, not having this
bum. Yeah, it's just he's not professional enough.
Yeah. Does he still smoke? Probably not.
I don't know.
Actually, white teeth for a smoker.
Yeah, I'm going to think that's.
They look quite fake, though, don't they?
Yeah, they are.
Because he smoked so much.
There was a comedian, I can't remember who said, if you had to lick the teeth of one manager in the Premier League, it would be Jurgen Klopp.
Do they have to be in his mouth?
Yeah, I think so. You're just licking.
I think he probably does. He probably does keep him in a glass of water beside his bed.
Yeah. Who would you like to lick? Maybe David Moyes.
Whose teeth would you like to lick? It's just so great to be back, guys.
Probably Matthias De Ligt's dad, so they'll probably be a bit of salami fat in them.
Yeah. Some bitter ballon and deep fried snacks.
Wasn't Klopp also late for the interview? I'm not defending Hamburg, but you know.
Were his jeans ripped like in a stylish way, or were they, did they come ripped, or had he ripped them through overwear?
I think they were just old.
They were just old, okay, fine. They weren't like jeans. Diesel jeans.
Because he spent so much time on the training ground just studying tactics, he doesn't waste his time
on his knees.
Worn through.
You have to wear jeans so much to have them rip.
Yeah, or buy the sort of, the Ed Hardys.
Exactly, yeah. Maybe they were like no one that could wear Ed Hardys allowed to man in Hamburg.
2012.
Somehow can't imagine Jurgen Klopp in those jeans with like elasticated ankles and
with like eight zips.
Yeah.
That don't go anywhere.
Moving on, I became aware recently of the concept of a Brexit tackle. So apparently this is a really big thing in youth football, that a Brexit tackle is when you completely like take out your opponent without getting the ball. So just like a really bad foul, basically. There's
why is it called that?
Is it because it's
directed against Europeans, or because it's like
no,
it forms a hard.
Well, so apparently the technique is as you take somebody out, you scream Brexit means Brexit.
So it's a sort of xenophobic tackle.
I don't know. I'm quite like curious about how much of a political critique this is.
It's a playground thing, right?
Yeah.
No, where did you say it was?
No, it's like it's in youth football.
I think it's a thing kids are doing.
I came across
it. Do you have any kids that can call up and tell us what Brexit tackle is?
Yeah, do call us if you're nine. Anyway, good to see the kids copying BBC Parliament instead of FIFA. Actually, do you remember there was a really good Twitter exchange probably a year ago about the stuff you see kids doing in grassroots football where they've copied it from TV? There's a tweet here from Tim Hardwick who said, "I coach an under-11s team. I'm amazed at how the kids are affected by FIFA and the Premier League. We have one lad who raises an arm before he takes a corner. Fuck knows why he does it. No one knows what it means. Yesterday, a boy lay on the floor behind the defensive wall." Which is like, I mean, maybe that stuff's useful. But then one guy replies saying, "We had a kid once who scored a goal and did that kissing and pointing at the heavens thing. His dad was on the sideline and explained he had no idea what was going on, as all parents and grandparents were still alive." Another guy said, "Watching my daughter's boyfriend's team at the weekend, noticed one lad, every time he spoke, he put his hand over his mouth."
They do that to stop being lip read with professional players on live TV because there are millions of people watching.
He's just doing it. Grassroots game. Well, the guy says, "My daughter's boyfriend's team." So is that an adult?
Exactly.
Childhood sweethearts, maybe.
Maybe his young daughter has a boyfriend.
That's what I meant, childhood sweethearts.
Oh, right. Yeah, real childhood. Yeah. Infant sweethearts. Yeah.
Infant sweethearts.
That's all quite tame and charming stuff to copy from TV. But my mate Josh told me that, do you remember when Robbie Fowler did that celebration where he pretended to snort the touchline? Famous thing. And it was like all over the news that week.
He denied. I read his autobiography. Did you read that as well? And he denies ever having touched coke.
Yeah.
And it was a reaction to people saying he was a cokehead.
Yeah. No, but his original defense.
It's a weird reaction.
His original defense was, "I was pretending to eat the grass. It's an in-joke."
I mean, that's such bullshit. Like,
and then he said, "Yeah, it's because all the Everton fans called me a druggie."
Yeah. I'm pretty sure there's a chapter in his book, correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, but it's called Coke.
Is it him denying?
I think it's him. There's a whole chapter of him denying taking coke.
Yeah,
don't write about it.
I haven't done the deep research on Robbie Fowler, because we will do an episode on him, to know whether he has. To my knowledge, he hasn't.
No, he denies it. And it's a great autobiography, actually. It's sort of written in his vernacular as well.
Yeah, nice.
It's good. It's a bit like the Jermaine.
He partied quite hard, didn't he?
I think so, yeah. And then he bought a load of houses.
Yeah,
that's what he's known for now. Real estate.
He's got quite weird. Because he did that weird video or something, didn't he, about his real estate. Yeah. Anyway, when he did that celebration, the snorting coke celebration that everyone kicked off about, my friend Josh, he was like 8 and he saw it but didn't really know what it meant, and he scored at school the following week after in a school match, and he did the celebration, and apparently all the parents on the touchline were just like horrified. He had no idea what it meant, but it was this 8-year-old snorting the touchline in front of everyone.
Or more likely, they all knew what it meant.
Yeah, one of the kids didn't, I guess. You just have no idea at that age.
That's so good. I mean, that's all quite light, because what you often hear about kids' football is this horrible atmosphere on the touchline of like parents getting into fights with each other and abusing the kids, abusing the refs. My cousin used to be a like Sunday league ref and said it was nightmare. That was the worst part of it.
Well, was he getting like assaulted?
I don't think he got assaulted, but just like intimidated and just like horrible.
Why would
horrible
you do that dads. Job? You get paid?
Yeah.
Or is it just love of the game?
No, you do get paid. He eventually got up to like reffing under 12s or whatever Premier League. So
is there an under 12?
Yeah. For like the academy teams, which you said was actually great. Like once you get up to there, the parents are not allowed to say anything to the refs, otherwise the kids get kicked out of the academy.
Oh no! That's clever. So they've got some leverage.
Yeah, but it's like when you're in some horrible bog ridden park on a Saturday morning.
Is it the parents abusing the refs, or is it the kids?
Parents.
It's the parents. Like, there was actually vicious. I saw a story last year that there was an interview with Andre Mariner, who's a Premier League ref, and he admitted that he'd been asked to leave an under-9s football match that his kid was playing in for abusing the ref.
Oh my God. Him of all people. Yeah. So do you think it just takes you over? I mean, I'm looking forward to my son being this age and me getting into scraps in the park.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like that he's giving it out as well. That
do you think because he's like, because I'm an elite ref, I can see other refs going maybe wrong, so it's particularly grating.
Yeah, perhaps. There was I remember hearing another story about Pep Guardiola when he was on his sabbatical in New York, that his kid was playing in like a under 10s football match or something, and the ref didn't turn up for this match, so Pep refereed it. He was like, oh, I'll do it, and nobody really knew who he was, so he was like reffing this match, and then he started just like, he couldn't help himself coaching the kids during the match, just being like, no, you're like odd position, you're overlapped, blah, blah, blah. And all the parents on the sidelines started getting really pissed off with him and being like, okay, like, what are you doing? Like, you're supposed to be the ref, blah, blah, blah. And at halftime, they came to him and was like, you're not refereeing the second half. Like, you're fucking getting involved in, this isn't your job. And so he was like, okay, whatever. And then second half, someone was like, wait, hold on a second. Is that the greatest manager alive?
Well, because in New York, no one knows who he is.
Yeah, back then,
they didn't.
Yeah.
Love it.
Actually, before we move on from Andre Mariner, Peter Crouch has this story where he insists that Andre Mariner asks the players to call him Dre.
The DRE. Yeah. The motherfucking DRE.
Just really not a ref name.
And they're dropped if they say no.
Yeah, if I was called Andre, I think I would try and be called Dre a bit.
I think I'd be Andy.
Andy Mariner.
Dre. While we're on the subject of youth team football, did you see this WhatsApp chat that went viral a few months ago? It was screenshots from a conversation. It was like the WhatsApp group for an under-8s team between all of the parents of the kids. And this dad, who is one of these dads that is just like takes it way too seriously, thinks he's like a Premier League manager, but he sent this message saying that was damn embarrassing. There's been no progression in 3 odd months. We need to work in 2s or 3s, create a triangle / vertical possession to move forward. We need to interchange positions, so if a defender moves forward, someone goes back and vice versa. Please watch any football match and assess how everything is trigonometry based, shapes in possession and moving forward with the ball, and shape without possession. It's very simple. Sorry, terrible grammar in this.
Is that under eight?
It's under eight.
Please watch any football match.
Yeah.
That's so bitter.
7-year-olds doing trigonometry.
Did you see that other WhatsApp group where the woman sent by accident a picture of her pussy?
Oh, yeah. I have seen that one. To an under eight football group. Yeah.
Really? I was like, please delete. I was meant for someone else.
Also, she did that classic thing that people always do, particularly parents, where they try and delete it, but they just delete it for themselves and not for everyone else. So then the whole group can see it and they can't delete it for everyone else.
Yeah, that's why she was like, please, please delete.
There was another one of this like Irish team who like the manager like got the team's new kits and was like taking a picture of kit to send to all the parents, and didn't realise it in the background. There was just like 3 lines of coke racked up on the table at like 11 in the morning.
I don't know if this should make the edit, but there was a guy in my parents' village who did that in the like village WhatsApp group. He sent like a dick pic, like an old man, and then he tries to delete it for himself, and then he did not see, so he removed himself from the group, and then 3 days later he died. Oh, so everyone was like, oh my God, that's literally the last we ever heard.
Did he know he was dying? He's like, this is my swan song. I want this. This is how you will remember me.
Signing off.
Yeah. Here's my 75-year-old dick.
I've been Jim and you've been fantastic. See you later.
That's so funny.
Oh, poor bloke.
Poor guy, yeah. God poor rest guy. His soul. Yeah.
Was he called Jim or was that your pseudonym?
That was a guess. I'm pretty sure he wasn't called Jim. I can't remember exactly what the pick was, but it was highly inappropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah, imagine just like falling asleep with the phone. The last thing that you're thinking of is you like pass out of this lifestyle. Oh, like, so embarrassing.
I should have deleted it for all.
Speaking of mental dads, I've got another one for you. In India, Dhruv Patel is Indian cricket's new hero. He steered them to victory over England on Monday. And he's now being inundated with selfie requests from hordes of shrieking fans. But there is one bloke among the billion Indian admirers who's not so sure, and that's Dhruv's own dad, who has never wanted him to play professional cricket. So his dad's a soldier. He's a retired sergeant. And he always wanted his son to go into a, quote, proper career. I think he wanted him in the army or maybe, you know, accountancy, medicine, something stable. But Dhruv pursued his cricket. And
is the army stable? I guess it's stable, but you might
be
shot dead.
On a border skirmish. Exactly.
Quite high stakes.
Stable, though.
Yeah, stable.
Good steady pension, unlike cricket. And apparently Dhruv had to hide his whole career from his dad. He didn't want him knowing he was playing cricket because it pissed him off so much. So The Guardian said this week that one day over breakfast, Jarrell Sr. noticed something. And Dhruv says, he was reading the newspaper and he suddenly told me, there's a cricketer that goes by the same name as you and he's just scored 100 runs. I got scared and didn't know how to tell him the cricketer was me. So he's just like living.
What a shame.
Oh, hang on, there's more.
Okay, go on.
It turns out a bit nicer. So he eventually gets selected for India, at which point I think his dad grudgingly accepts it. And his dad, who is the retired soldier, just said to him before the game, he was, you know, expecting some sort of like manly kind of, look, son, I didn't believe in you, but you made it. Well done. And instead, apparently his dad just goes, can you at least salute me? So, Dhruv gave him a salute. And then actually Dhruv scored 50 in the match. And when he celebrated, he did the salute again, which is quite nice.
Yeah, I mean, he's not in the army though.
I guess it's just respect.
For his like rank or for the fact that he's his dad.
No, I think just a sort of like nod.
Yeah. It's quite egotistical for the dad. Like your son has finally made it to like the elite level of cricket, representing his country, and all you want him to do is salute you.
Yeah, it's got quite the vibe of like those dads, sort of First World War era dads who made their sons call them sir and would just like only shake their
hand. How many of those do you know?
Yeah, plenty.
First World War.
You know the vibe I mean. Like Edwardian England, where they're like really formal relationships.
Not what you call him, like captain.
Yes, general.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm now thinking of captain.
Major Rivlin.
But actually, Dhruv's dad probably isn't even the most mental in the Indian squad. That accolade belongs to the father of Shubman Gill. Shubman is the next big thing in Indian cricket. He's a handsome lad and he's seriously good. And on his debut, he made 91 against Australia in this famous win. He was the man of the match. And the whole country was like giving him adulation. No one expected them to win. But Shubman's dad couldn't agree. So in an interview afterwards, they were like, how are you feeling? Your son's just led India to a famous win. And he just said, I find it worrying. Hopefully he will learn from not scoring 100 and not repeat this mistake. So he's just annoyed with him for not getting 9 more runs. And he's still, Shubman's dad is still really hard on him. So Shubman got 100 last year, but his dad felt he should have got 200. And he just said, when will he learn? And then literally 2 matches ago, so this month, Shubman scored another 100. And in his post-match interview, he said, hopefully my father won't scold me for not getting more runs and he will let me out of the hotel. I'm honestly not sure it's a joke. Yeah. He regularly makes these jokes about his dad not letting him.
Well, he's like he's under house arrest.
Yeah, I think it's like, only 108, go to your room, kind of vibe.
How old is this guy? How old is he?
24.
Yeah. Go to your room.
It's India, different family relationships. Fathers are still there.
Well, that's like Earl Woods, isn't it? I mean, he's the
Tiger's dad.
Yeah, he's the Earl Woods of Indian cricket.
What, because he's...
pushy, horrendous.
And actually, we're in...
And borderline abusive.
Yeah, pretty horrible.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about another dad who has a few things in common with Earl Woods in the Dennis Rodman episode. I'm not going to spoil it.
Is it Dennis Rodman's dad?
Another mystery dad.
Actually, on the point of pushy cricket dad, Nasser Hussain, the former England captain, always tells the story. I might get some of the details wrong, but the basics are that Nasser was at school in Essex and they played against Harrow, which was like a big opportunity to impress in front of a large cricketing crowd. And Nasser, he scored 100 and he took 9 of the 10 wickets in the match. And everyone was like, amazing, well done. He got into his dad's car jubilant afterwards. And his dad was just like, you let yourself down there, and just didn't speak to him for the whole journey home, and then sent him to bed without any dinner because he didn't get the 10th wicket. He was like, you missed an opportunity to really show off there.
Is that what you're going to be like?
Yeah, what with, I know, with Sasha. Already started, mate. I'm like, you didn't move that toy quickly. You really let yourself down in tummy time earlier. You only rolled over from your back to front. Yeah, yeah, that'll be me on the touchline. But I think Nasser Hussain's dad was famously pretty nuts.
Yeah, well, he sounds like it.
But England captain.
So yeah, great.
It works.
We're going back to that old question of whether it's a good thing or a bad
whether
thing.
Whether it's worth it.
Is it an abusive relationship? Yeah.
I think it has. It will have a part to play in the Asian century, where India is looking like a superpower in the making. I think the fact that there is a trend among the dads to push your kids far is helpful. Mm-hmm. So I sound like I'm about to recommend
exactly.
it. And that's why we need a fascistic...
Exactly, justifying something.
A new religious nationalism.
A benevolent dictatorship.
Maybe the cane has...
Yeah, democracy is weak and decadent. Let's move on.
We need a strong leader.
Yeah. Fear does do good things. Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So do you remember a few years ago, Marcelo Bielsa, or a member of Marcelo Bielsa's backroom staff, was caught spying on a Derby training session before Derby played Leeds? Well, there's been another incident of spying, I'm glad to report. So this Monday, it was the huge clash between Torino and Roma, which I'm sure you watched.
Glued to it.
Yeah. But in the build-up to that game, the Torino assistant coach, Michele Orecchio, had been dispatched to spy on Roma's training session. So I'm just imagining like the Torino manager calling Orecchio into his office and being like, Orecchio, Michele, we have a special mission for you. And Michele is expecting to like, it's like, what's happening? Am I going to be like shadowing Pep Guardiola for a week? Or is this like an all expenses paid scouting trip to the Costa Rican second division? But instead, the manager just throws him some camouflage trousers and those like reflective binoculars and a bucket hat with some twigs taped to it, and sends him off to the Roma training ground.
So what was he? Was he?
So he was. So he was sent to spy on it, but it didn't really go to plan. So the security guards at the Roma training ground found Michele halfway up a tree with his binoculars, overlooking the cartoon spying. Yeah.
I'm picturing, you know, in Dad's Army where they have literal like branches.
Yeah, I think that's what it was like. Yeah.
Newspaper with eye holes in
that. It's actually not even his first failed spying mission. So last year when Jose Mourinho was Roma manager, one of Jose Mourinho's backroom staff found the same guy in the stands for watching one of their training sessions with recording equipment. But also he does seem to always be targeting Roma as well, so I don't know if it's just that he lives nearby the training ground.
Pop in.
You're on your way home, just you know, are there any high trees in the
got access to night vision goggles, yeah, in the Roma area.
There was actually another story from a few years ago, also in Italy. So it was the 2013 derby between Genoa and Sampdoria, and the Sampdoria players were at the training ground before, like, doing, you know, training, and suddenly they spotted some movement in a woodland nearby overlooking the training pitch, and some of the staff go to investigate, and they end up pursuing this guy who they described as looking like Rambo, who's in like full military attire, like camouflaged head to toe with binoculars. They chase this guy through the woodland and eventually corner him. He's like hiding behind a tree, and it turns out that it's one of the Genoa youth coaches
on a spying mission. Love it. Fully, yeah, camoed up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I'm picturing bullets over the
looking like, yeah, like, yeah, exactly, like, yeah, like Josie, bandana, Jody Marsh.
It's sad that I can picture that Jody Marsh.
Yeah, of course.
double bullets.
Yeah, trained. Yeah.
You know the one.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's endemic in Italian football.
Well, yeah. I mean, these two instances. Two instances.
That's trespassing,
years apart,
isn't it?
Yeah.
No, I think. Yeah, I don't know. Apparently, wasn't. Didn't Marcelo Bielsa say when they got caught that this happens everywhere in Argentina? Surely you could just have an amnesty on this and be like, everyone watches everyone's training session. Yeah. Everyone spies on everyone, and then it's
televised.
Like,
quite packed, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess.
Bielsa's one was really weird. He was like, I am ashamed of myself for doing this, and now I want to explain. And he gave like a 2-hour presentation of how he spies. Really, yeah, meticulous.
So was he saying that he'd been doing it for all their other opponents?
I think the implication was, I do this all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Their form did drop off quite.
Is there no punishment for it?
I don't think, I don't know, was there?
For being a traitor, sure. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's good. It's a nice bit of like slapstick. Maybe as well, they could have cornered behind trees.
Yeah, maybe they'd end up being recruited as a double agent and come back being like, yeah, they're playing 4-4-2 this weekend.
Yeah, they got long ball.
Yeah,
you're right though. How much advantage can you really gain? I mean, I'm not a tactics.
No,
I'm no more than a novice. Probably fuck all.
At the time, Bielsa said, "It is not illegal, but not necessarily right." That was his quote. So I don't think he did actually get fined or anything.
Yeah, it was a big drama, I remember, because it was Lampard who he was spying on, wasn't it?
Do people do that in English football?
Well, this was in the Championship, but other than that, I don't think there have been many examples up there.
Not caught.
No, maybe there's like secret recording equipment. Yeah. Bugged.
Recording equipment? Oh, what, like,
just
like
watch a video. Audio.
Just say really muffled. Pass it. Like, how is that useful?
Oh, I was thinking video.
To be honest, I reckon it happens more often than we think. Mm. It must be very easy to do. Like, you look at pictures of some of these training grounds, like the Fulham training ground, there's houses overlooking it.
Yeah.
I'll just go and knock on their door and ask if you could just set up a camera and
just stake
like the Kennedy assassination. They rent a flat for a year in advance.
Above that book depository. Or was it the grassy knoll? What, you think you could stake out there with a telescope and a box of donuts kind of thing?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, moving on. So when Luca Brasil won the Snooker World Championship last year, he was quite an unorthodox champion. He was Belgian for a start, which is, I think he's the first Belgian champion ever. But he also went on these like booze-fueled benders till 7 a.m. in the middle of the tournament.
That's like, pretty like normal for snooker, doesn't
well,
it?
It was the older,
yeah. Yeah. This wasn't quite benders with the Rolling Stones, though. So he was asked about these benders, and he basically admitted that it was just him and his friends playing FIFA and drinking beers.
Oh, God. No, okay, so yeah. No crack pipe?
Yeah. Not a crack pipe in sight.
Oh, that's disappointing. Yeah. Game's gone.
It really has.
FIFA, come on.
But Luca's unorthodox approach continued after he won. So he pocketed 500 grand from winning this tournament, and he instantly made himself broke by buying a Ferrari, a Porsche, and a Range Rover. So you might think that this was just him being a bit flashy and, you know, he's finally got loads of cash, but it was actually a calculated decision. So it's a quote from him. He said, "I went from being a millionaire to a non-millionaire. It was a conscious decision to buy the cars and feel that bit of pressure again."
As you're saying, like I wanted to.
He needs to struggle to put food on his plate.
Millionaire, 500,000. Not a mathematician.
I'm going to waste all this money, so I want to win again.
Exactly. Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm sorry to report, it's not exactly going to plan for Luca, and he seems to recently be resorting to entering TV quizzes to win cash. So last week he went on the Belgian show Blocker, which is a quiz show that he's got cash prizes, but unfortunately he was knocked out in the first round. But it wasn't all bad because he was given a printer as a consolation prize.
As a generation game.
Yeah, they never fucking work, printers.
Yeah, he's now got a Ferrari, a Range Rover, a
Xerox,
a Porsche, and an HP DeskJet 2710, and his miserable bedsit in Antwerp.
I feel like
it's a weird investment style, isn't it? Like, just give everything away to something that's going to depreciate immediately.
Especially when you're playing and your career is so sort of high risk and volatile.
So has he not won any tournaments?
No, he's not won anything since then.
So the strategy ain't working.
No.
The trajectory seems like the next move will be he's living in one of the cars.
Yeah. Hopefully the
seen this
Trevor.
One before. The crack pipe's probably not out.
Yeah, it's not that far off.
Sold the PlayStation. Yeah. Sold the printer.
Yeah, I do like this image of him just like entering all of these online, you know, these like supermarket things that pop up, not supermarket things, you know, these like pop-ups that come when you're on dodgy sites asking you to like spin the wheel for
I've won £500,000. How often is he playing then? Is he just playing a lot and losing, or is he?
He was quite a surprising winner when he won the world championship, which is what, over a year ago.
Yeah.
And snooker, you're playing like every week. I didn't really realise. It's like darts. Darts, quite a lot of it, you're just at a leisure centre playing in front of like no one.
Yeah, it's not often that you're getting 500 grand for winning.
If you do, put it away.
Don't buy three cars.
Buy three cars as well.
Also, I just love how originally he was like, I just sort of did it to put pressure on myself. And now he's like, does it come with three cartridges?
The pressure is fucking mounting.
Oh, well, I look forward to doing a Luca Brasel episode in about 10 years when he's fully gone off the rails. Speaking of maverick stars, the legendary QPR forward Stan Bowles died this week. And Bowles, he was a sort of George Best type figure in the 70s. In fact, his obituary in The Guardian this week, it began with this. It said, "It was once said of Stan Bowles that he spent all his money on betting, booze and women, to which he responded, 'Well, at least I didn't waste it.'" Which I swear
that's
the
George Best quote.
It's basically a less clever,
pithy
version of George Best. So I don't know. They didn't make that comment. But he was a bit of a character. He sort of harked back to the era where you'd bump into footballers down your local boozer and they'd be like trousering a brown envelope full of cash from some dodgy bloke. And Stan was often on the take. So there's a story that he was getting 200 quid a game from Gola, the sportswear brand, to wear their boots. And Adidas approached him and offered to beat the offer with 250. And so he just wore one of each boot and pocketed 450 quid. Got in quite a lot of shit for it in the end. And I mean, he was, by the sounds of it, basically a gambling addict. He would bet on everything. Apparently, he used to spend entire days betting on games of snakes and ladders.
What? Which is, the one that he was involved in?
Yeah. He was playing, but he was
not just finding kids in the... just going down to the...
Challenging people.
Preschool and...
streaming it online. 50 quid a corner, apparently. But what's a corner of snakes and ladders?
I don't know.
Is that a row, maybe?
That's basically betting on dice, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Like, I mean, what the dice is going to be.
He did a lot of that.
Yeah.
Before, he was playing in the FA Cup, and during the warm-up, he bet his teammate a tenner that he could knock the... you know how they have the trophy on a plinth at the pitch side for the FA Cup? He bet his teammate that he could knock it off from 20 yards away with the ball, and he did it. It's quite impressive.
You won a tenner.
Yeah, he won a tenner and a lifelong addiction to gambling. Apparently, even on the way into his first Gamblers Anonymous meeting, he got talking to a bloke.
You bet how many people are in there.
No, he bet a bloke on how long he would last clean from gambling.
Also, did he win?
The bloke was also a gambling addict. Yeah. Don't think you guys really get what this room's about. But his gambling did lead to an all-time football love triangle. So Stan was really good mates with Don Shanks, who was another sort of maverick QPR star. They were best pals and they got into a lot of scrapes together. Like they ended up in jail once for borrowing a van that had been used in a bank robbery, and they got charged with bank robbing but were let off. But anyway, he once bet Don Shanks £100 that he couldn't steal Graham Souness's girlfriend. And Souness's girlfriend was Swedish beauty queen Mary Staven, who was Miss World, and she was also in Octopussy. She was a Bond girl. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she was going out with Graham Souness, but Stan Bowles bet Don Shanks £100 he couldn't steal her, and he did steal her, and he went out with her for 2 years. But she then had an affair with George Best, and this led.
What a weird like how would he? They're like, when they were like, how did you meet? It was like, well, yeah. Did she know about the bet?
I don't know.
How did you meet? Well, I bet this other lad that I couldn't steal your way from Graham Souness for £100.
Also, it's like, so I was going out with one footballer, then for a bet I went with another, and this led to a punch-up between George Best and Don Shanks in the foyer of a Scottish hotel, which apparently was front page news in about 1982.
Yeah. We're still talking about it.
Three of the four characters are dead, I think. But
we really launched this episode to cover the current
and now news from 1982.
I said the funniest stories in sport this week, what I meant was discussing Octopussy and George Best's punch up. But apparently it was a massive story at the time. And we're bringing it back.
It's a slow news week.
I thought it was a pretty good story. That's actually not even a love triangle, that's a love square.
There yeah.
Three.
I love octagon.
Octagon. All right. Probably no more.
Okay, next.
Actually, that is all we've got time for this week. It's a rare week where we're not reading out any reader letters. We did have a few, but they were slightly strange stories. We've had some good. We've had some video messages. Shout out to Brandon.
That was one funny thing that I saw that if we got time, just to add a very quick one. But me and Zach were having a laugh about it the other day in the office. So if anyone's got the BBC Sport notifications, you'll get breaking news and stuff. And there was one that happened the other day, and it just said Andy Murray, Britain. Announces he may only have a few months left. ... And you're like, oh shit, like what's happened? Has he got some horrible, diagnosis? And then it did then say off career. Just the way that it popped up was quite clickbaity.
I'm not going to read it out because it is so boring, but they also did one of the most boring updates ever, which we stuck in the newsletter this week.
What was that?
It was like David Brailsford, the new Man United owner, has just been talking to Rasmus Højlund, the United striker. He took the left-hand staircase and then walked on into his office while Højlund went and sat with the players on like the north end of the stadium. It was even more boring than that.
Yeah.
It was so boring.
So yeah, it was like they're talking at the top of the bottom of the stairs.
Yeah.
They spoke for a couple of minutes and then went in different directions of the stairs. One turned left, one turned right.
So boring. Put it in the newsletter. So do sign up, upshot.email, if you want to sign up for our newsletter. All right. I think that's all we've got time for. Zach, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Nikki, thanks
Cheers.
For joining us.
Thanks.
George, thank you too.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. Cheers.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.